And he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Polasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Mostly in Germany. That's 20% of its European workforce. Workers in an Opel plant walked off their jobs when they learned of GM's plans. A United statement put out by GM's unions throughout Europe warned that this could have consequences like the 1998 Flint, Michigan UAW strike against GM in North America. GM lost $2.1 billion in that one when strikers virtually shut down the entire GM North American operation, along with many GM suppliers. GM says the cost of labor in Germany is the main reason it's cutting the 12,000 jobs. No plants will be closed by these cuts, according to GM, but the company expects to save as much as $620 million a year. GM has been outsourcing some white-collar jobs to Canada and to India from its plants in the U.S., and it says the cost of labor in Germany isn't sustainable. Weak demand for new cars in Germany also played a role in the decision to slash the jobs. GM has to start negotiations now with unions in Germany on the details of the job cuts. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Gains made in ensuring children and the poor are threatened by state budgets that are cutting Medicaid. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Medicaid budget shortfalls of $40 billion exist in the states. Nearly half the states have acted to restrict enrollment or make it harder to stay in the state children's health insurance program known as SHIP. Children account for nearly half of all those getting Medicaid. Another 4 million are covered under SHIP.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
At the age of 90, she walked clear across America to rally public support for election reform. 4 years later, she's not just walking, she's running. She is Doris Haddock, known to millions as Granny D. And now, this indefatigable champion for political integrity is running for the U.S. Senate in her home state of New Hampshire. Imagine Granny D in the Senate. Washington would never be the same. Start with money. She says, I will not take $1 of special interest money in my campaign. I will accept no financial support from any group, left, right, or middle. My time will not be spent with lobbyists or fundraising, but will be spent with and for the people of New Hampshire so we can try a little democracy for a change. She gets even more blunt. If they approach me to suggest that they might have donations for me if I vote the right way, I will insist that they be arrested under the loneliest law in Washington, the federal bribery statute. Sharp and feisty as ever, Doris is crisscrossing New Hampshire on foot, engaging people all along the way and urging them to join her in standing up to politics as usual. Don't worry that I'm too old, she says. I can and have run circles around those old boys in the Senate. What a scrapper. When petty Republican election officials ruled that she could not list her famous nickname of Granny D on the ballot, even though other candidates used their nicknames, she simply went to court and had her middle name legally changed to Granny D. So now they must list her like that. She's having fun, including using a series of road rhymes along New Hampshire highways in the style of the old Burma Shave signs. As one shouts out, make a statement with your vote, send Granny D to rock the boat. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get involved, call 603-563-8086 or go to grannyd.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some trainers. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
You need to buy or sell your home, but where do you start?
Sorry to interrupt, but the place to start is LendingTree.com. You can search home listings, have real estate agents compete for your business, and bankers compete for your mortgage. You can even get up to a $2,000 gift card to the Home Depot when you close with an agent certified by LendingTree. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE, or visit LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details and licensing. LendingTree, Inc. is not affiliated with the Home Depot.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from the world headquarters in San Rafael, California, of the Organic Wine Company. In the second and third hours of our program, we're going to do an online organic wine tasting, educate you a little bit about some of these extraordinary products. You can find more about them on the web at www.ecowine.com, or you can call for information about them, 1-888-ECO-1. And we'll be getting back to that later on in the program. It is, however, Friday, for the first hour of our Friday program, and time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. I think of him as America's congressman, and we're always so pleased to have him with us on the last day of the week. Next week, actually, we're going to be doing this on Thursday, but today on Friday. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you here. Are you in Vermont or Washington?
Yes, I'm in Burlington, Vermont.
Ah, great, great. Welcome back to our beautiful state. The trees are turning. It's absolutely marvelous. Bernie, I something I wanted to pass along to you. I didn't know if maybe you'd seen this. Southern Methodist University in Dallas and several partners. Before I go any farther, if you have a call for Bernie Sanders, if you have a question, comment, whatever, you know, we welcome the calls. This is pretty much a caller based segment to our program. Our number 1-866-889-8894. 1-866, one of those newfangled toll free numbers. 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, Southern Methodist University in Dallas and several partners are distributing 200,000 copies of a passport-sized booklet called The World Citizen's Guides, which they plan to make available to all U.S. college students planning to study overseas. This is a new book that this university is putting out to U.S. college students from all colleges, telling them, and I quote from the book, "The U.S. is losing friends at an alarming rate. Don't be the tourist who tries to impose the American way on others because you think our way is better," end quote. We have sunk so low in the esteem of the world in the last 3 years that we're having to warn our college students before they go overseas. That is not the experience I remember when I was a college student going overseas.
And I agree.
What is going on?
Well, quite the contrary. What used to be the case, not only in Europe and the developed world, but throughout the developing countries, America was looked to be as the hope, as the beacon of hope for the future, and people wanted to emulate us. And it's very upsetting to us as Americans to find that we are being held in such low esteem, that poll after poll shows that people throughout the world, in almost every country in the world, regard President Bush with very, very low regard. And furthermore, what we should understand is this reflects badly on our effort to fight international terrorism. Because we're not going to be successful in the fight against international terrorism unless there is real international cooperation. And if zillions of people throughout the world are not respecting the United States, it's going to be really hard for their governments to work with us in the kind of effective way that we need to fight terrorism. So it's bad on a number of levels.
Yeah, and not just the governments. It's going to be harder for us to recruit individuals who might be intelligence assets or who might want to hang out and help out, who might want to be translators, who, you know, independent contractors for our government, our intelligence services.
That's right.
This Bush administration, these policies have just created a disaster.
Tom, what I wanted to do just for a second, obviously, as we enter the final stretch of this campaign, is I know you have listeners all over America, and I'm sure that there are some of them who are thinking hard about the election and haven't made their decision yet. The main point that I want to make to folks is there are a zillion issues out there, many, many issues. You name it, there's an issue. But I think it's important as Americans that we focus on the most important issues facing our country. And I think if you do that, just look at it objectively, I think what you will conclude is that while John Kerry may not be the best candidate in the history of the world, and that's my view, I think he is far, far superior on almost all of the important issues facing our country compared to Bush, who may in fact go down in history as one of the worst presidents that we have ever had. Just look at the issues. I mean, I want the American people to take a look at the economy. Why is it that with an explosion of technology and an increase in worker productivity, the middle class is shrinking? Remember what Ronald Reagan said, Tom, in 1980? He asked a very profound and simple question to the American
people. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Now, for the millionaires and billionaires who are listening to this program, I concede it. You are better off. Your income is soaring. Bush has given you huge tax breaks. Bush has made it easier for you to take our jobs to China. He's made it easier for you to pollute our environment. So if you're a millionaire or a billionaire and you don't really care much about the future of this country, I can at least understand that it is rational for you to vote for Bush. But if you're a regular working person, the likelihood is you're working longer hours for lower wages. If you are a regular working person, you may be one of the 4 million Americans who under Bush has slipped into poverty. You may be one of the 5 million Americans who under Bush has lost their health insurance, and you are certainly one of the Americans, whether you've lost your health insurance or not, who has seen their health insurance rates soaring. So I would say that if you just look at the reality of our lives on issue after issue, you find that this particular president is standing with the large multinational corporations, he's standing with the wealthy, and he's standing against the needs of the middle class, against the seniors, against our kids. And I would hope that people would just reflect on those broad issues.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and you know, there's the conspiracy theorists out there who say it's because Bob Schieffer golfs with the Bush family, or has in the past. These kinds of issues didn't really much get highlighted in the last debate.
The environment
never even got brought up.
Well, the nature of, you know, somebody who is, you know, a politician who has been a candidate many times, and I've been in these debates, these 30-second stuff and this 2-minute stuff drives me nuts. Because it's what you do then is you look at a dozen issues rather than stay on the most important issue. And in my view, Tom, forgetting foreign policy in Iraq for a minute, the simple, most overwhelmingly important issue facing the American people is the collapse of the middle class.
Yeah.
Why is the middle class collapsing? Why are we losing good-paying jobs and seeing them replaced by Walmart-type jobs that pay people low wages and minimal benefits, and why is it getting harder and harder to form a union to protect your interest? Those are the issues that we should be focusing on.
The
economic issues, which is, you're quite right. I thought in that debate, Schieffer did not give them the time to discuss this thing. But you look at the issue of overtime. How many working people understand that this president has changed the rules, Fair Labor Standards Act, to wipe out overtime pay for 6 million American workers? People struggling to keep their heads above water, they need the overtime gone on behalf of corporate America. Minimum wage nationally is $5.15 an hour. Has anyone heard the President of the United States talking about any meaningful changes in minimum wage, which is now at the lowest purchasing power that we've had in decades?
Yeah. No, the opposite. He's been resisting it. Bernie, we've got a couple of callers. Shall we open up the phone lines? Okay. On line one, we have our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. Joyce in Holland, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Joyce, welcome to the program.
Oh, for praise of God that I finally got through to you. It took me till today to get your number, and I've been listening to you for months. And I certainly enjoy your program.
Well,
I learned a lot from you, and I'm a firm Democrat. I've walked all over this country for, and I bargained, and I was president of a union and all kinds of stuff.
Good for
and
you.
And I live in this very, very Republican area. And they're always talking about abortion. And
That's right.
I say I'm not going to have an abortion, and if you guys put a padlock on your zippers, we won't have any problems. anyway, you can tell I am not 16. I had the occasion when Dukakis was running to have my political signs out in front of my yard, and they came with a constable from the township and said that I was breaking the law because they had an ordinance against political signs. And I said, well, I tell you, I don't know what you did in World War II, but I worked at kept the Army on the move with making hitches for the trucks.
I hope you remind them you had another law. It's called the United States Constitution and freedom of expression.
But my brother didn't come back from World War II. He was missing in action. We never got any information. And he gave his blood for this freedom of speech and the Constitution.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I'm not going to accept your fine. And they were going to go get me and all that kind of stuff. So they left, and I got a hold of I asked him, what about the Bush quail sign across the street? And that was none of my business. So I got a hold of the ACLU. Boy, the first thing you know, my picture was in the Grand Rapids Press, and they had all kinds of news. The local paper didn't carry hardly an inch of it about the Holland City paper. But anyway, the township changed their ordinance. But now why should an old lady have to take them on like that? And, of course, now with this election, the Republicans are stealing Republican signs all the time, and I just let them know on the radio program, well, because we now can have them, you got the opportunity to do your thievery.
Yeah.
I appreciate your program, Tom, and I certainly hope I can get it on in Florida. I'm leaving for Florida next week. Is it covered in Florida?
At the moment in Florida, you'd have to listen to us on the Sirius satellite radio system. It's one of the state. Well, actually, there's Cable Radio Network has a bunch of affiliates in Florida too. If you go to cableradionetwork.com, you can find the places in Florida where you can hear the station there. But at the moment, I don't believe that we have an actual radio station in Florida that's carrying our signal.
Well, I thank you very much. And as of today, you know, Michigan is going to go for carry, and we hope they carry it through on the 2nd after they have all their this thing that they're going to put on ABC and all that kind of stuff. We certainly hope he still carries Michigan.
There you go. Did you have a question for Bernie, Joyce?
Yes, I certainly did. I wanted to ask you, did you read this book that they had for this Bloodsworth and about these guys? This was the first fella that I understood they gave a book to everybody over there with this fella that got his DNA and was removed from New Jersey from the prison. And now the bill is supposed to be on Bush's desk, and he's supposed to sign this, so all those guys get DNA. But as I understand it, wasn't he the only governor in the United States that said the jury's made the right decision on killing all those people in Texas, and he didn't want them checked?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not familiar with that book, but obviously we want one of the reasons, I think, there seems to be a backlash against capital punishment in this country. And the former Republican governor of Illinois was very strong on this issue. He suddenly discovered that a lot of the people who were on death row, in fact, may well have been innocent. And we need, I'm not a supporter of death penalty, but I think even those people who are want to make sure that people are guilty. And you need to use DNA and all of the best evidence that we can find before we take somebody's life.
Yeah, and Governor Bush of Texas was opposed to those kinds of appeals. It's a sad day. Joyce, thanks for the call. Our number 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Friday afternoon first hour brunch with Bernie, Congressman, America's independent congressman. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get Total Choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Just an old truth teller. I'm your candid friend.
And welcome back. I'm not 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie, our Friday afternoon segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the United States Congress, been there since 1991, fighting for all Americans, doing an absolutely marvelous job. My favorite member of Congress, I think one of the truly fine men in Congress. Bernie, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Tom.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. On line one, we have Drew in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Drew, welcome to the program.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Hartman. It's an honor to talk to you. Your breath fresh air for the third quarter of my day. And thank you, Ms. Sanders, for the opportunity to talk to you.
Very welcome.
My question is kind of in two parts. I understand a bill was introduced into Congress not too long ago for reinstatement of the draft. which was roundly defeated by a score of like 402-2. And the two questions I have about this is, one, why would somebody introduce a bill that obviously had some kind of a flaw in it that would get it defeated so roundly? And two, why? What was that flaw?
Okay. Let me tell you what that's about, Drew. In the House, the bill was introduced by a fellow named Charlie Rangel from
right.
Harlem. Charlie is not a fan of the draft. He introduced the bill. You know why he introduced the bill? So that you would call me up on this program to talk about it.
I see.
Because what Charlie wanted to make clear is, number one, he wanted to show the American people, A, when we're talking about the loss of over 1,000 Americans in Iraq and the wounding of 7,000 more, who are those folks who are getting killed and wounded in Iraq? Do you think they're the sons and daughters of members of Congress? I don't think so. Are they the kids of the wealthiest people in this country? No, they're not. They're working class and low-income kids. And Charlie wanted to make that point, that when you fight, have a militaristic foreign policy, we send our young people off in harm's way, the people who are getting killed are the people of the middle class and working class of America. And the second point that I think Charlie wanted to make, and he certainly has made it, is the following. Right now, there is no debate, that our military is grossly overextended. And that is why we are calling up National Guards people all over this country, many of whom are really overage to be fighting in Iraq, ill-prepared. And what Charlie is asking is, if we continue this militaristic type foreign policy, and if our military is overextended, what kind of consequences will that bring about? Is it possible, in fact, that the President of the United States, George Bush, will reinstitute the draft? And my view is, yes, it is possible. I'm not saying that it will happen. Now, the fact that the vote on the floor of the House was overwhelmingly against it tells you absolutely nothing, because that vote took place 1 month before the election. The real issue that we have got to keep our eye on is what happens 6 months from now, when there's not an election in a couple of weeks and we need more troops. How are we going to get it? So I'm not saying that there will be a draft, but I am saying that raising that issue is real, and there is a possibility that if we continue extending our military all over the world, yes, there is a possibility that the draft can be brought back.
Thanks, Drew. Bernie, I've long been an advocate of national military service, or national service, which would include a military component, but also you can work in hospitals, schools, things like that, nonprofits, like actually most of the first world nations have. When I lived in Germany, several friends of mine, or kids of families that we were close friends with, had to go off and do their year of service. And it seemed like a rite of passage for them. They got to see the world. They got to see more of the country. It was a broadening experience. Many of them actually looked forward to it. It wasn't for many of the families I knew. They didn't actually go into the army. They went off and they worked, missionary work, whatever. Not religious missionary work.
You're talking
about social service.
A national AmeriCorps of sorts.
That's exactly what it was, with a military draft, with a military option. But you had to do a year after you get out of high school. Do you think something like that could ever happen in the United States? Do you think it's a good idea? Well, actually, we've got to take a break here.
The details, of course.
Yeah,
but it is
absolutely.
Something worth entertaining, integrating it with higher education, for example, making sure that these young people get compensation, which will help them pay for higher education. It could be
well,
a good,
and I think,
thing. On the other hand, if it's done poorly, it could not be.
It could be a disaster, yeah. And I think that might even be part of how it is in Germany. I think you get some credits toward college for doing it. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 1-866-889-8894.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And we got much more manpower, much more equipment there.
Just, he just doesn't understand how the borders work, evidently, to say that. That is an outrageous claim. And we'll continue to protect our borders. We'll continue to increase manpower and equipment.
That was President George W. Bush during Wednesday night's debate against Senator John Kerry. The presidential candidates were asked to comment on immigration policies and protection of the U.S. borders. While Bush says the borders are better protected, a survey of Border Patrol officers released on August 23, 2004, isn't quite as optimistic. 64% of border workers say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do their job. Charles Scholotter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, says the department puts more effort into making sure employees look right, but not in their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
In addition, the president again mentioned his guest worker status card for immigrant workers. He failed to explain why during the last session of Senate when a bill sponsored by Republican Senator Larry E. Craig of Idaho that would have helped 500,000 farm workers gain legal temporary residency, White House officials asked Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist to not offer the bill for a vote. As a result, the bill died on the floor. Craig has vowed to reintroduce the legislation this session.
By the end of 2006, General Motors will slash up to 12,000 jobs from its European operations, mostly in Germany. That's 20% of its European workforce. Workers in an Opel plant walked off their jobs when they learned of GM's plans. A United statement put out by GM's unions throughout Europe warned that this could have consequences like the 1998 Flint, Michigan UAW strike against GM in North America. GM lost $2.1 billion in that one when strikers virtually shut down the entire GM North American operation, along with many GM suppliers. GM says the cost of labor in Germany is the main reason it's cutting the 12,000 jobs. No plants will be closed by these cuts, according to GM, but the company expects to save as much as $620 million a year. GM has been outsourcing some white-collar jobs to Canada and to India from its plants in the U.S., and it says the cost of labor in Germany isn't sustainable. Weak demand for new cars in Germany also played a role in the decision to slash the jobs. GM has to start negotiations now with unions in Germany on the details of the job cuts. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Gains made in ensuring children and the poor are threatened by state budgets that are cutting Medicaid. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Medicaid budget shortfalls of $40 billion exist in the states. Nearly half the states have acted to restrict enrollment or make it harder to stay in the state children's health insurance program known as SHIP. Children account for nearly half of all those getting Medicaid. Another 4 million are covered under SHIP.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to participate. On line 3, we have Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom and Bernie. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate what you both do for all of us. Tom, being from Grand Rapids, I thought you'd appreciate this story. I work at the Democratic headquarters a couple days a week, and yesterday afternoon, a guy comes in with a bunch of Kerry Edwards signs in his hand, and I say, hey, you're coming in the wrong way. And he goes, hey, these were all stolen. And he caught a guy.
Stolen?
Stolen signs. He brought in 40 signs into the headquarters yesterday. They were all stolen. He called the cops.
How did he get stolen signs?
Well, he had his sign stolen, and he ran out and caught the guy, 2:30 in the morning, and he got the sign back, and the guy took off. And his wife said, I bet you these guys are going to be back. So he put the sign back in his yard. He turned off the lights. The guy came back, and this guy, because you never know what these guys might be doing or thinking. This guy had a lot of guts. He ran after him. He had his cell phone. He called the police. There's a police report. We reported to the news networks yesterday afternoon this incident, but they had 40 signs in the truck. The police detained the guys that were doing it. There was a couple of kids in there, and he got the signs and brought them back into us. The other interesting part of this is that, and you'll know what this university is, they were students from Cornerstone University, the Christian university here in Grand Rapids.
Very Christian
so
thing to do.
Like, I know this goes on both sides, but that was just wild. That was too much.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark. Thanks for the call. That is outrageous. Bernie, it seems that you know, partisanship in every election is just a kind of normal part of the game. I mean, we've all seen that and participated in it. But the voter, the suppression of the vote stuff that seems to be happening largely on the Republican side. We're out in Nevada and Oregon now. We find that there's a corporation that the Republicans set up that was setting up tables outside government buildings and in shopping malls to register people to vote. And if those people checked the Democrat box, then later on they threw away their registrations, and those people are going to show up at the polling places and find that they can't vote. We have, you know, in Florida, you've got Jeb Bush's goon squad, his Florida Bureau of Investigation, knocking, you know, going in the black community, knocking door to door, saying, we understand there's voter fraud going on, basically intimidating people. He says he's going to continue doing it right up to November 2nd. And, of course, negative advertising, voter suppression. Do you see this? Is this? I mean, you've been in politics for a long time. Is this year seem different to you than
others? Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you know, the point is well taken. You made the point, and our recent mock made the point, this stuff, you know, stealing of signs is nothing new. It's gone on forever. But I think there is, in this Republican leadership, as exemplified by, say, people like Tom DeLay or Karl Rove, their attitude is they're going to win no matter what. You know, what most people believe that the democratic process is, you know, you go forward, you do your best, you work hard, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But these guys are of the view is we're going to win one way or the other. And we're seeing that, I think I've mentioned this before on this program, we're seeing it on the floor of the House.
Yeah.
I mean, this business, the most important piece of legislation dealt with in the House in the last 2 years was this Medicare bill, you know?
Yeah.
And at the end of the regulated amount of time the members of Congress had to vote on it, it lost. Bush's proposal lost. And they kept the voting rolls open for 3 additional hours. This is on national television before the whole country. They broke the House rules. They kept it open. They twisted arms.
Yeah, of course, it was the middle of the night, wasn't it?
At 5 o'clock in the morning. My own bill, my own amendment on the USA Patriot Act, it won at the end of the 17 minutes of regulation time. They kept the voting rolls open another 20 minutes to twist arms to defeat it. And I think, you know, what you're seeing DeLay doing in Texas, where he had an unprecedented redistricting of the congressional boundaries after the normal redistricting, because he wanted to gain another 5 or 6 seats for the Republicans. In other words, these guys are going far, far beyond where we have been before in using their power to ensure that their side wins. And I think this is very dangerous for democracy. This kind of business, this attack on Kerry, on Kerry's service in Vietnam, the blatant lies, attempt the character assassination, what we're looking at right now, next week, I presume, unless we stop it, Sinclair Television. You're familiar with that issue, Tom.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sinclair Television owns, it's a major Republican right-wing broadcasting company. They own 62 satellites throughout the country, including many in battleground states, in an unprecedented move. These guys are saying, oh, yeah, well, we're going to preempt regular programming, and we're going to put on a vehemently anti-carry, I think it's a 90-minute program. Unprecedented.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it frightens me to think about what will happen in the future, because other companies are going to do exactly the same.
Well, there's already blowback beginning, though, Bernie.
You're looking at Soviet-style television, not television for an American democracy. So if you're asking me, are things different right now? Yeah, I would say they are. I would say that these guys in power are not interested in playing fair. I think they're interested primarily in doing everything they can to make sure that their side comes out on top.
Yeah, but with the Sinclair thing, we're already starting to see some blowback. I mean, now there are calls for breaking up the media monopolies. I mean, this actually may turn out, much like some folks suggest, George Bush being president was a good thing in as much as it ripped the mask off the face of compassionate conservatism and allowed us to see what the real agenda of the conservative right was, which is cheap labor, destroy the middle class, rich get richer. And the Sinclair fiasco may start a national groundswell for going back to limits on the concentration of the media.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I certainly hope that that's the case, but that assumes that Bush is defeated, because Sinclair and Bush want to deregulate the media further so that companies like Sinclair can precisely own more TV stations all over this country, and so that we can end up with a situation where in community after community, one company like a Sinclair can own the local TV stations, radio stations, and newspapers, which is a very dangerous blow to democracy as we know it. But I think I want people to understand what this precedent means. It means that any time on any issue that a national broadcasting company wants to preempt regular programming, they can put on the air whatever they want. And that, to me, is pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, or a newspaper or a radio station. Well,
newspapers, but here you have prime time preempting. And this, airwaves are owned by the people. And the and these stations, these networks, presumably are doing a public service. Well, it's not a public service to preempt broadcasting and a week before the election put on an outrageously dishonest program in the middle of a campaign.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the air with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the independent congressman, the only independent member of Congress, my congressman from Vermont, but I think of him as America's congressman. Paul in Florida is on the line, he's on line three. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey. Well, Bernie?
Hi, Paul.
How are you? Bernie, I don't understand how this guy, Bush, and try to sell himself to the people, and especially the Christians, the people that call themselves Christians out there, that he's a man of God and a man of Christ's teachings, when he's destroying the unions, he's destroying the middle class, he's destroying the pensions, he's destroying the wages of the working class, he's destroying health care affordability for the working class people. He's got open borders. He's letting the corporate monopolies run free, and a man of Christ, in my opinion, wouldn't even attempt to do that and conceal it the way he tries to conceal or try to portray himself as a Christian. And I think it's just totally outrageous. What do you think,
Paul? Boy,
thanks,
Paul. You said it better than I could have said it. I think. And Kerry tried to make this point, I think, with some impact in the last debate. When we talk about being godly, if you like, trying to do God's work, I think you don't turn your back on the people who are hurting the most. How are you doing God's work when under your presidency 4 more million people entered the ranks of poverty, when you don't raise the minimum wage, when 5 million more Americans have no health insurance? I think To do God's work is to reach out to all people, and not just to the very, very wealthiest, the people who are doing the best, the people who need the least help. If you're a millionaire and a billionaire, you don't need any help, and yet Bush gives them huge tax rates. But what about the people in America who are sleeping out on the street? You know, what about the more and more people who are coming into the food shelves? So I think that what Bush and his friends have done is created a lot of these wedge issues. So you see a constitutional amendment to ban a gay marriage, and they say, well, that's the religious issue. No, I think Paul hit it right on the head. The religious issue, in my mind, is how do we uplift poor people in this country? How do we make life good for everybody? How do we create a community in which all of our people have health care and educational opportunity? Not how we divide and divide and divide. So yeah, I think, Paul, you said it better than I do, and I absolutely agree with you. But I think the way this guy succeeds, and this is the man who came in to be a unifier and not a divider, is precisely by dividing the American people on the gun issue. As we speak right now, the NRA is going to be spending $20 million in the battleground states to tell the American people, John Kerry is going to take away your gun. It's not true. It's an absolute lie. Constitutional, you know, then you have the other groups with the gay issues and so forth. If we focus on the issues that Paul talked about, what is going on to ordinary people? You know, we should win this election not by a close vote, but by a landslide. And let's not get deflected. But, Paul, you hit it right on the head. Thank you for your remarks.
Well said. And in the foundational writings of Judaism, the notion of tikkun, Christianity, Matthew 25 and the Sermon on the Mount, the whole notion of taking care of the weakest among us as being the most godly work that we can do, it's right. just been lost by these right-wing cranks. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. On line 3, Sergi in California.
Hello?
Hello, you're live on the air with Congressman Sanders.
Hi. I actually do not have, like, question, but I'm Russian. And I just want to thank you guys for this program. And it's very actually sad for me because I came from country where I saw same problem, you know, what I saw here, what I see now here. And I came to the country of my dream, you know, and I see... I didn't see democracy, actually. I'm sorry, maybe I'm wrong, but it's some people try to break democracy here.
Yes.
And this is interest, this is war. You know, I'm actually, I don't know, it's not my business about American war in Iraq, but I used to have experience in Afghanistan, and, you know, every war going to get peace, you know, and it's better to have a peacemaker than a warrior, I believe. And if Kerry wants to get peace, and what's wrong with it? Why Bush telling all the time, oh, he got to be peacemaker? Is this wrong?
That's a good point.
Happened? I don't know.
I think Kerry's point in the debate that the president, when you go to war, that is the most important and difficult issue that the president or members of Congress have to deal with. And I think what common sense suggests is you do everything you can to try to not go to war, not to see thousands of people die and get wounded. And I think that the evidence is overwhelming that this president did not give the United Nations inspectors the time they needed to determine that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that Iraq was not responsible for 9/11. Yes, Saddam Hussein was a horrible dictator, and yes, we should work to bring democracy not only to Iraq but to all countries in the world. But what this president has done in his rush to war, I think in many ways has been counterproductive to the fight against terrorism, and there are a lot of folks in this country and in Iraq who have suffered as a result of that.
Well said.
And can I tell you something else?
Certainly.
And President Bush, he's talking about his faith all the time. And, you know, it's like Bible, like people there was praying on every corner, you know, but they were doing, like, sin all the time, you know. And I cannot explain, my English isn't enough, but it's kind of painted coffin, you know. He just talking one thing and doing another thing. He's just sending people to die, and in his own state, Texas, like you said, he just don't care about people, you know?
Executing people.
Your
Sergi,
English
thank
is
you.
Fine, Sergi, and you made a very good point.
Yeah, and I thought Bernie, his painted coffin metaphor was an excellent one. We can explore a little later. We have another caller, Dave in Humboldt County on line one. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Good morning, gentlemen. Bernie, I have to wonder what goes on in the brains of so many people in this country. The one thing that's so obvious is our country is going trillions of dollars in debt, debts that are owned largely by foreign countries, Arabia and China. What in the world... Why do we have people still out there screaming four more years? People, obvious from a lot of the callers, you and others have helped to get some of us aware, but there's still that element out there that just doesn't see that.
Dave, what's going on in my view, and you have to understand the dynamics of an election. Let's look at what we have.
We have about 20 seconds, by the way.
How are we doing on time, Tom?
We got about 20 seconds, but you can wrap it up after the break, of course.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is you have some folks with an incredible amount of money who control the political process, control the economy, control the media, and they're playing a shell game in deflecting attention away from the real issues and get us arguing on wedge issues and instead of focusing on how we create a country and an economy that works for all of us.
Which is where we really need to be. It's Congressman Bernie Sanders on the Tom Hartman program. Stick around.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Now it's time for this billionaire moment.
When it came time to bilk California out of billions in energy costs, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When George Bush's campaign needed hundreds of thousands of bundled dollars, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When Dick Cheney needed help crafting energy policy that was friendlier to corporations, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." And when someone had to keep small Enron investors calm so the big guys could bail out before the stock collapsed, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." He pioneered new ways to create profits, and now he has to wear an orange jumpsuit and languish in a cell without room service. We can only hope that there's a squash court at that minimum security prison. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Acts through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. The second presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the carry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes Program, goes door-to-door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
This woman that I met the other day, whose daughter is on her third round of chemotherapy for a lymphoma, a type of cancer, and how she and her family members have mortgaged their houses because the daughter ran out of the health care insurance. But it's like, this is the type of story that I guess kind of moves me to keep doing what I'm doing and to reaffirm to me that we need some serious change in this country.
Manuel Rayon left his job at the Madison Concourse Hotel 6 months ago to work as an SEIU hero.
The Iraq War is the other common theme. You know, I've talked to family members who have lost their son or daughter due to the war. The past 4 years, under the current administration, things haven't gotten any better. And that's why, when you go out and vote, you should think about not just one issue, but many other issues, and keep your mind open to the different issues that are involved with this upcoming election, and to pay close attention to the debates to know the differences between the candidates. And I really care about those issues. And, we're trying to do something about that.
Surprise and Vayone are two of the more than 2,000 people that have left their regular jobs to educate and register voters. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Hey.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Your election was hardly
and welcome back again. This is the problem when you're doing remotes and you don't see everything going on in front of you. And you're just running on your ears. Tom Hartman here back with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our telephone lines are full. 1-866-889-8894. On line 3, Ed in California. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Me and Bernie doing a good job. I have a thing here. Before the last major election, a girl approached me on the college campus. I'm a late bloomer. And she asked to change me from a Democrat to a Republican because she got $2 for every name she could change. Okay?
Yeah.
You got the idea. So basically what I'm saying is it doesn't make any difference what party you belong to. If they're taking the Democrats off the rolls, register as a Republican and nobody's going to know.
Yeah.
Well, the issue is no matter what party you're registered on or if you're registered as an independent, or in my state of Vermont, we don't have party registrations. Get out and vote and make sure that everybody knows.
That's what I'm trying to say. But as long as they're taking you off the ranks in Florida and places, register as a Republican. They don't take Republicans off the rolls.
I see.
What's the difference?
Okay.
At least you're going to have your name there and you can vote. I just want you to vote.
Yeah.
I don't care what you vote as.
There you go. Well said, Ed. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Wes in Phoenix, Arizona on line one. Hey, Wes.
Hey, nice to talk to both of you. I heard on a right-wing program yesterday that Kerry had taken substantial campaign contributions from Iran, and they were going to be raking him over the coals for that, and that kind of strikes me as something that might sink him. I want to get your guys' take on that.
Well, it's illegal to take foreign contributions, contributions from another country, so I don't believe it.
Yeah, the source of this is Jerome Corsi, who's this guy who runs this website where an anti-Semitic, he refers to Muslims as towel heads. He talks about Catholics as boy buggerers. He talks about Jews in a negative way, and he's the co-author of the Swift Boat book, and he's got a new book out.
In the next 2 weeks, everybody, I think you're all aware that you're going to have an enormous amount of mud being thrown and lies. And
this is the beginning of it.
So don't take everything, all that seriously.
All right, well, if it's from a shaky source, I won't sweat it.
Yeah, I mean, this guy has got this new book out. I've gotten now, I think, almost every other day at least, Bernie, I get an email from his PR firm trying to get him on my radio program. It's just absolutely incredible what they're doing, how they're hustling this stuff. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
We still have
about 40 seconds. Any final advice for our listeners?
Yeah, I think when a few minutes ago Dave asked, how does it happen that a guy with such a disastrous record is running so strongly? And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the NRA is going to spend $20 million in the next couple of weeks telling the American people what is not true. Kerry's going to take away their guns. Got the Christian Coalition sending out 30 million pieces of literature, not talking about outsourcing,
not talking about the loss of
overtime pay. And that's one of the things that influences the election. Let's stay on the important issues facing the middle class and working families. You know what? We're going
to
win this election.
Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We got much more manpower, much more equipment there. It's just he just doesn't understand how the borders work, evidently, to say that. That is an outrageous claim. And we'll continue to protect our borders. We'll continue to increase manpower and equipment.
That was President George W. Bush during Wednesday night's debate against Senator John Kerry. The presidential candidates were asked to comment on immigration policies and protection of the U.S. borders. While Bush says the borders are better protected, a survey of Border Patrol officers released on August 23, 2004, isn't quite as optimistic. 64% of border workers say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do their job. Charles Scholotter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, says the department puts more effort into making sure employees look right, but not in their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
In addition, the president again mentioned his guest worker status card for immigrant workers. He failed to explain why during the last session of Senate when a bill sponsored by Republican Senator Larry E. Craig of Idaho that would have helped 500,000 farm workers gain legal temporary residency, White House officials asked Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist to not offer the bill for a vote. As a result, the bill died on the floor. Craig has vowed to reintroduce the legislation in this session.
By the end of 2006, General Motors will slash up to 12,000 jobs from its European operations, mostly in Germany. That's 20% of its European workforce. Workers in an Opel plant walked off their jobs when they learned of GM's plans. A United statement put out by GM's unions throughout Europe warned that this could have consequences like the 1998 Flint, Michigan UAW strike against GM in North America. GM lost $2.1 billion in that one when strikers virtually shut down the entire GM North American operation, along with many GM suppliers. GM says the cost of labor in Germany is the main reason it's cutting the 12,000 jobs. No plants will be closed by these cuts, according to GM, but the company expects to save as much as $620 million a year. GM has been outsourcing some white-collar jobs to Canada and to India from its plants in the U.S., and it says the cost of labor in Germany isn't sustainable. Weak demand for new cars in Germany also played a role in the decision to slash the jobs. GM has to start negotiations now with unions in Germany on the details of the job cuts. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Gains made in ensuring children and the poor are threatened by state budgets that are cutting Medicaid. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Medicaid budget shortfalls of $40 billion exist in the states. Nearly half the states have acted to restrict enrollment or make it harder to stay in the state children's health insurance program known as SHIP. Children account for nearly half of all those getting Medicaid. Another 4 million are covered under SHIP.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
Thank you, Monsanto. Thank you, Scotts. These two pesticide giants have inadvertently demonstrated the scientific insanity of using our own Mother Nature as a lab rat in their rush to market bioengineered products. Monsanto and Scotts recently teamed up to genetically alter a turf grass called creeping bentgrass, primarily used on golf courses. The two corporations artificially manipulated the genes of this grass seed, not so the grass would require less water or less mowing, but solely so it can absorb greater doses of the company's pesticides, thus increasing corporate sales. But scientists warned that this altered grass would spread its pollen to faraway grasslands, displacing native species, creating superweeds, and, well, messing mightily with Mother Nature's delicate balance. Oh, don't be such worrywarts, said the companies. This grass has been thoroughly tested, so take a hike. But their so-called tests wouldn't get a passing grade at a high school science fair. One, for example, tested only a minuscule plot of 0.1 acre, finding that the pollen drifted only 1,400 feet, so no problem. Cute, but now a serious test has been done by the EPA. Quote, this is one of the first really realistic studies that has been done, admits the guy who did the 0.1 acre test at. Indeed, this real test was on 400 acres, more like a real golf course would be. The pollen of these altered plants drifted not 1,400 feet, but at least 13 miles. What this makes clear is that the genetically altered corporate product is not only going to escape and contaminate our environment, but it'll do so, as one expert now concedes, a lot faster and a lot further than people anticipated. This is Jim Hightower saying, it also makes clear that we can't trust corporations that base their global safety claims on 1/10 of an acre. To help fight their insanity, go to organicconsumers.org.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live from the world headquarters today in the San Francisco area of the Organic Wine Company. Tomorrow I'm speaking at the Bioneers Conference in San Rafael. And so we're out here today, and it's a beautiful, beautiful day. Sitting out here looking out over the valley off to the San Francisco Bay in the distance. Donna Zajon is the former three-term legislator and author of a new book called The Politics of Hope, Reviving the Dream of Democracy, which is a title that just, you know, really rang for me. And so I'm very pleased to have Donna on as a guest today. By the way, if you have questions or comments for Donna and would like to participate in the conversation, our number 1-866-889-8894. But here for the first few minutes, let's talk with Donna Zajon. Donna, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Hey, welcome.
Good morning, Tom.
The American politics, in fact, just in the last hour, we had a fellow call in from Grand Rapids who had gone out and caught somebody stealing a Kerry Edwards sign from his front yard. And the guy had a pickup truck, and he had 40 of them in the back seat. So he had obviously been being, you know, very, very energetic in his efforts in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they called the police, and they took the signs down to the Kerry headquarters. But, I mean, you know, what do you do with them? You don't know what homes they came from. Mm-hmm. The guy was unwilling to say, you know, if anybody was paying him or why he was doing this, blah, blah, blah. We're getting reports like this from all over the country. In fact, in one community, there was a news story a few days ago about a woman who has taken to covering her Kerry Edwards signs with poison ivy. to deter thieves. We have stories from Oregon and Nevada of actual voter fraud, Democratic ballots being torn up. We've got lawsuits already happening right now in the state of Florida for voter disenfranchisement against the Jeb Bush administration. It really seems pretty grim. How can you be so hopeful?
Well, those stories bring back memories of when I was running for the Oregon legislature a few years back, and it's amazing how many of your volunteers get pretty aggressive the last couple of weeks. It's kind of, you know, they want their team to win, and you get very assertive, and most candidates do their best to try to keep their volunteers in check, and it doesn't always work. You know, I don't know if that kind of thuggery is limited just to politics. I think there's been a few battles in the pitching arenas of playoff games between Boston and New York, and others. But you know, I don't mean to.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting point, Donna.
Question.
Yeah, you actually raise an interesting point, and that is the sportification of politics in the United States. Mm. Increasingly, what I'm seeing, I mean, I remember back in the 60s, most of the people who supported, for example, Goldwater or Johnson in 64 in particular, and oddly, in particular, I think on the Republican side, which at that time was where I was standing. I was a teenager, and I was going door to door for Barry Goldwater. Understood the underlying philosophy behind the policies of the candidates, and the sense that I get today is that perhaps more of the Democrats understand the underlying philosophy of the politics. There's kind of a revival of interest in, who was FDR, what was he all about, what was going on. Kind of liberalism is coming back. But on the right, increasingly, or in the Republican Party, increasingly, and we're seeing people who are just dealing with this as if it's a sports game and, hey, it's my team, And I think part of this might be because Bush has abandoned traditional Republican principles of fiscal responsibility, non-intervention overseas. I mean, it's the Republican Party that works so hard to try and keep us out of World Wars I and II. Mm-hmm. And World War II, I mean, it was just bitter battles on the floor of the House incredible speeches claiming that Roosevelt was a warmonger and he was just doing this for political power, blah, 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 by the Republicans up until we entered World War II. But today it seems like very, to a larger extent than, frankly, I remember at any time in my lifetime, and I really get this when I see people being interviewed on TV, these people don't understand the philosophy of the parties and either the worldview, the perspective, and as a consequence, the issues are being taken as sort of laundry list. Okay, who's got the best laundry list? Who am I going to go with? Or even the issues are being ignored, and it's who's the tough guy who's going to fight terrorists, or or who's going to make sure that abortion is going to be remaining legal? And I see this as an indication of sort of a sickness in our society, perhaps the lack of civics teaching in school. What's your take on this?
Well, and when I sat down to begin writing about a year and a half ago, I tried to make sense of this. What is the breakdown that's going on in our country right now? Why is it happening, and what's it going to lead to? And by writing my ideas and my experience of being in politics and realizing that I agree with you. I'm in my mid-50s and served in the Oregon legislature 20 years ago, really before the breakdown. It was just at the beginning, I guess, of that the stage of what I basically call the breakdown of our political system. And I came up with an idea of applying developmental stages to politics, just like we all go through our developmental stages of our life. We go through evolutionary stages. And the idea is very well documented that all things go through an unfolding developmental stage. And by coming up with this idea, it kind of made sense. And the book is about what I call the four stages of political evolution, the first stage being anarchy, where we just completely tear down everything. Second stage being traditionalism, which is very much the stage a big percent of the political parties that you're speaking of, and the behavior that dictates some of these folks are squarely coming from a stage of traditionalism. And when traditionalism really doesn't work for us very much anymore, and that begins to break down, stage three of resignation depression, which probably half of our country is in right now, is really where they begin to reside, in the stage of resignation. And when we really as a country can come to grips with the systems that we've known for the last 200 years are no longer working for us for a whole host of reasons, not the least of which is our rapid change, our chaos, and our globalization, we'll break into a new stage called the Politics of Hope, Stage 4, with a whole series of different types of leaders and different types of systems to fully revive and bring people into a true democratic system.
This is like Donna Zajon's version of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Very interesting. It is exactly. And when I was in a nursing school at the University of Missouri in 1971, I heard Elizabeth Kubler-Ross speak, and she had just published her seminal book on death and dying.
Yeah.
And it very much came back to me that we can apply these stages to many areas in our life, as we've done. It's now very well known of the stages of loss and death. And I believe a form of death is occurring in our country right now. And the first stage of anarchy is based in her stages of denial and anger. Mm-hmm. Her third stage is bargaining. You help me, I'll help you. And that's what the party system has been for most of our history of our country. When that doesn't work, the patient goes into full depression. And that's stage mm-hmm. through. And when we accept our depression, that the systems are breaking down, that's when we have something new is born. And she says it's called acceptance. And right. I call it acceptance into a new form of politics, the politics of hope, which is stages of collaboration and true democracy. So, yeah, so, very, very insightful. I refer to her several times through the book.
Donna, I'm wondering, it's probably unlikely, but I just yesterday on the flight out here to California, at the airport, I picked up the current edition of Harper's, and there is a 4 or 5 page article in there laying out Karl Rove's, the way he has behaved in previous campaigns over the last 20 years and the things he's mm-hmm. done. And it curls your hair. I mean, he was attempting to make the Alabama Supreme Court all Republican, and he had one race where they contested that thing for over a year before they finally got it, even though the Democrat had won and the Republican ended. And it had to do with manipulation of the public, manipulation of the political process, manipulation of the judicial process. I mean, it was a win at all cost. It was
truly
frightening.
Stage two person, and he's a highly successful stage two person. It's win at all cost. It's the old style of heroic leadership, and that I've got to put my guy in office. And I do not believe the public wants to know the truth. Therefore, we spin it, and we make sure that at all costs we do whatever it takes.
Or even that the public isn't entitled to know the truth. I mean, reading this article about Rove and his in the current issue of The Atlantic, about Rove and his tactics in the past, you get it that he has absolutely an utter disdain for the public, and you know, just sees them as ciphers to be manipulated. And so, where are we in this series, and what kind of hope can be coming out of this? We only have about 2 minutes left here, Donna.
Okay, the reason I believe it's hopeful is that before breakthroughs, we always have breakdowns first. The breakdowns lead to a realization that what we've been doing in the past isn't working, and that's what allows us to have an evolutionary leap into a new something that is going to really revolutionize the way we are in this country and the way we are in the world.
Now, so what's that new something going to look like? What's that
exactly.
something new
we
something
really
going to look
like?
We
don't really know what all these new systems are going to look like, but it is hopeful that the breakdown is occurring. And that is part of the idea of applying developmental stages. When a patient is dying and they go through depression, it's actually a hopeful sign because they're coming to grips with it.
Now, one of the stages in Kubler-Ross's list was anger, as I recall. Yes. I thought it was the second one, and although I may be wrong.
Denial is first, anger second.
Yeah, so it's the second one. And if the callers to this station are any indication, in the last minute we have here, I'm getting a lot of anger. Do you see that as a good sign?
I do. I believe that anger motivates us. As long as anger is directed towards what's next and can have a conversation that can be a stand for a culture of collaboration. Because a conversation that starts in anger and judgment and making the other one wrong, and that's the only purpose of the conversation, nothing significant happens in that kind of conversation. So part of the breakthrough has got to be to use our anger to foster us in a way that we can learn to communicate and take the best of all of us.
Yeah, and you actually believe that that's what's happening, and that would mean every time somebody expresses anger, trying to take it to the larger picture, trying to take it to how can we help? How can we use this to promote democracy?
Yes,
how can we help
make
us all better?
The anger must be in service to the bigger picture of a true democracy. It cannot be anger just to defeat others.
Right. Whereas the Rove technique is to invoke anger and direct it at a candidate, pure and simple, destroy them.
Mm. And that happens in many cases when the traditions
yeah.
are fully
That's what's being used. So the way we combat that is to try and say, okay, you're angry about this, so how can we make this into a bigger picture?
Yeah.
That's
I'd
great.
I'd love to hear from folks. Politicsofhope.com is my website.
Politicsofhope.com, the website, the title of the book, The Politics of Hope, Reviving the Dream of Democracy by Donna Zajon, Z-A-J-O-N-C. Donna, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Welcome to the West Coast.
Thanks. It's great being here.
20. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Sometimes you feel a little more like time is on your side with a good glass of wine. Yeah, I know, you know, for some folks it's not a place they can go, and I respect that. And on the other hand, there's some significant, apparently some significant even health benefits to all this kind of stuff. Louise and I first started drinking organic wines. Must have been, oh, you're waving your hand. I don't know how long, 10 years ago? How long ago was it, Veronique?
Something like 10 years ago, yes.
Yeah, thereabouts. And I don't even remember how I ran across you, but it started out, I read an article in Science News, in one of the science publications, that said that of all the agricultural products, you know, carrots, rutabagas, lettuce, everything else, that of all the agricultural products out there, the one that they put the most pesticide on and the most herbicides on was grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was actually even an indication that among Bowery Bum alcoholics, you know, in New York City, the winos, that many of them were dying of what looked like pesticide poisoning or had neurological disorders as a consequence of pesticide poisoning.
My goodness.
Long before their livers were going. And these were people, of course, who were abusing alcohol.
Yes.
And at that point, I thought, you know, we should stop buying the cheap stuff from the grocery store. And I went off on the web and I found the organic wine company. And let me introduce Veronique Reskin.
Yes.
And welcome to our program, Veronique.
Thank you, Thomas.
And her brother, Michel.
Good morning.
And Michel, I can't pronounce your last name.
Ginouillac.
There you go. And so pleased to have you both with us. We're broadcasting here in the San Francisco area from the world headquarters of the Organic Wine Company. And we're going to get back to politics in just a second. I consider this actually part of political action, that the whole idea that helping live lightly on the earth, this is really one of the larger dimensions. You know, the whole organic movement is growing worldwide and nationwide, and I think it's an important one. I think it's just a very, very, very important one. So one of the things we're going to do online here, and we're going to do it over the course of the next 2 hours, just a little bit here and there, and just for a moment, is an online wine tasting. You guys are offering, on our program actually, you have an ad where you're offering three bottles of wine. Now, these are not your cheapest wines. You do have some inexpensive wines.
Yes, we started around $9 a bottle up to $39 at this point.
Yeah, so this is from relatively inexpensive up to solid mid-range. And your $39 bottle wines, I thought, compared very well with things like you know, $125 the Chateau Lafite, you know, some of the non-organic wines.
Very possibly, yes. We tried in this sample pack to have a little bit of for everybody, so a red and a white as moderate price, and then a top of the line from our own vineyard.
Yeah. In fact, you got into this because your family in France owns a vineyard.
Exactly. For 200 years, we had a vineyard in the family, and I was called on duty to manage the winery and to make wine myself for about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
That's when I created the Chateau Véronique in the name of my sister, and it's become one of the most popular wines.
Yeah, yeah. And although you're a physician, you're a medical doctor, an MD.
Exactly.
Do you practice?
Well, not anymore at this time. I'd like to come back to it, but the business has taken a lot of our time.
Kind of taken over your life. So first of all, we have this this white. This is a Chardonnay, and I can't say in French the name. How do you say it?
Domaine La Batteuse.
Uh-huh. So you can see why I can't say it. The lousy English edition would be Domaine La Batteuse. That's the horrible American pronunciation.
Come on, you can do better than this.
No, I can't. If it was German, I could. I can't pronounce it. French. And I'm going to taste this. This is, first of all, it has a nice fragrance. How would you describe the fragrance, Michel?
Well, it's a little bit on the
green. You got to talk into the microphone,
not
the bottle.
Yeah. It's a little bit on the green apple.
Yeah.
You know,
it's marvelous. It's marvelous. Okay, we got to take a break. We'll be back. Actually, what happened to John Kerry's Vietnam battle situation? They actually went back to Vietnam and found the people that he was attacking. Fascinating story. Stick around. We'll be right back.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And we got much more manpower, much more equipment there. It's just he just doesn't understand how the borders work, evidently, to say that. That is an outrageous claim. And we'll continue to protect our borders. We'll continue to increase manpower and equipment.
That was President George W. Bush during Wednesday night's debate against Senator John Kerry. The presidential candidates were asked to comment on immigration policies and protection of the U.S. borders. While Bush says the borders are better protected, a survey of Border Patrol officers released on August 23, 2004, isn't quite as optimistic. 64% of border workers say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do their job. Charles Scholotter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, says the department puts more effort into making sure employees look right, but not in their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
In addition, the president again mentioned his guest worker status card for immigrant workers. He failed to explain why during the last session of Senate when a bill sponsored by Republican Senator Larry E. Craig of Idaho that would have helped 500,000 farm workers gain legal temporary residency, White House officials asked Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist to not offer the bill for a vote. As a result, the bill died on the floor. Craig has vowed to reintroduce the legislation in this session.
By the end of 2006, General Motors will slash up to 12,000 jobs from its European operations, mostly in Germany. That's 20% of its European workforce. Workers in an Opel plant walked off their jobs when they learned of GM's plans. A united statement put out by GM's unions throughout Europe warned that this could have consequences like the 1998 Flint, Michigan UAW strike against GM in North America. GM lost $2.1 billion in that one when strikers virtually shut down the entire GM North American operation, along with many GM suppliers. GM says the cost of labor in Germany is the main reason it's cutting the 12,000 jobs. No plants will be closed by these cuts, according to GM, but the company expects to save as much as $620 million a year. GM has been outsourcing some white-collar jobs to Canada and to India from its plants in the U.S., and it says the cost of labor in Germany isn't sustainable. Weak demand for new cars in Germany also played a role in the decision to slash the jobs. GM has to start negotiations now with unions in Germany on the details of the job cuts. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Gains made in ensuring children and the poor are threatened by state budgets that are cutting Medicaid. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Medicaid budget shortfalls of $40 billion exist in the states. Nearly half the states have acted to restrict enrollment or make it harder to stay in the state children's health insurance program known as SHIP. Children account for nearly half of all those getting Medicaid. Another 4 million are covered under SHIP.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You've been listening. If you're going crazy a little every day, you've been listening to too many George W. Bush commercials. For example, the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, who say, and I quote from John O'Neill and Jerome Corsi's book, Unfit for Command, when Kerry made his landing and chased that guy down and killed him who fired a rocket at his boat. He says, this is simply false. There was little or no fire. This according to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth bunch. But here's Nightline now. Nightline, the NBC TV program, you know, with John Stossel and all that. I believe it's NBC. Maybe it's ABC. I don't know, whatever it is. Anyway, Nightline, the Nightline program, sent a team to South Vietnam. And they said, let's find out if, these people are saying it's all lies, and they're saying it on the national airwaves, and they're saying it in a documentary that Sinclair wants to broadcast on TV stations all over the United States, particularly in the swing states. Could it be that it actually is true? And so they went to Vietnam, and they went to this area, and they found Phu Van Tham, now 54, she was local Viet Cong commander during the war. According to him, the area was a hotbed of guerrilla activity. They'd recently been reinforced by a 12-man unit supplied with small arms and one B-40 rocket launcher. According to Vo, there were at least 20 Viet Cong soldiers at Na Vi that day. He says, quote, there were 12 soldiers from the provincial level and 8 from the district level. His wife, Vo Thi Vi, 54, says February 28, 1969 is a day that the villagers of Na Vi Hamlet will never forget. Everything was destroyed, she said. There were no houses left. They leveled everything. There were no leaves left. The fighting was very fierce. According to the citation for Carey's Silver Star, when the boats approached the hamlet, now this is the official Navy record, quote, a B-40 rocket exploded close aboard PFC-94, Carey's boat. He personally led a landing party ashore in pursuit of the enemy, the citation says, before commending Carey's extraordinary daring and personal courage for attacking a numerically superior force in the face of intense fire. Of course, the Unfit for Command book, the Swift Boat Veterans, they say this is simply false. There was little or no fire. Of course, none of them were on the boat with him. This is important to remember. Of the 9 guys who were on the boat with John Kerry, 8 of them are traveling around the country with him right now. They call him the Band of Brothers. And one of them is just kind of griping, but he's not outright challenging it. He's a Republican. He doesn't want to get into it. So here's what the villagers saw, according to the Frontline documentary, which I'm assuming is going to be on TV here sometime in the next week or two. Who knows? I mean, maybe it'll be after the election, but I suspect that, if they're working for ratings, Frontline is going to try and get it before that. Yeah, villagers said this is what they saw. Vothi V told Nightline, firing from over here, firing from over there, firing from the boat. She was only a couple hundred yards away when a swift boat approached and turned and approached the shore, she said, this being Carey's boat, and added the boat was unleashing a barrage of gunfire as it approached. I ran, she recalled, running fast, and the Americans came down there yelling, attack, attack, and we ran. Her husband, Tam, said the man who'd fired the B-40 rocket was hit in a barrage of gunfire. Then he said he ran about 18 meters more before he dies, falling dead. This apparently was a man, was the guy that Carey killed. And here they have no problem, this is the villagers, they have no problem remembering Ba Thong, the man who has been dismissed by Carey detractors as, now this according to, again to the Swift Boat Liars for Truth, as a lone, wounded, fleeing young Viet Cong in a loincloth. I've heard that over and over and over again on these news programs. This description comes from John O'Neill's book. John O'Neill, of course, being the guy that Richard Nixon hired in 1972 to follow John Carey around the country and harass him. He's now the leader of this whole swift boat thing. Well, Nguyen Thu Toi, 77, told ABC News, no, this is not correct. He wore a black pajama. He was strong. He was big and strong. He was about 26 or 27. Go figure, right? Go figure. It's the local folks are completely contradicting the swift boat veterans and totally corroborating John Kerry's line of what happened. This in the story by Andrew Morse, What Happened in Kerry's Vietnam Battles. Nightline speaks of witnesses of disputed firefights. Sylvan Learning Centers is pulling their ads from Sinclair, according to stories we're getting. I think, frankly, this is going to lead to something larger. I think there are people calling for a return to the fairness doctrine. Frankly, I'm rather ambivalent about that. I don't think it's going to happen. On the other hand, there is a strong counter-reaction now saying we need to undo the media consolidation. We need to do something about this media consolidation. And that, to me, seems like an excellent idea. Okay. We have Victoria Jones and Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service on the line. And welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
we've got to keep this one short here. What's happening in? Are you both in Washington?
I'll go first, and then I'll follow up.
Okay, I'm broadcasting live from California here today, so we're all in different places. Where are you guys?
Yeah, we're both in Washington. We're in different parts of Washington. We're both in Washington. Well, actually, Washington is fairly quiet. We're sort of in an in-between period. The debates are over. Everyone's debated out, and they're getting ready for the next shoe to drop. I mean, right now, as you know, the attack is on Kerry for his ill-advised remark about Dick Cheney's daughter, which, of course, they've all jumped on. And then next week, we can expect both the campaigns to ratchet up, but also the attacks to ratchet up. I do think what you're talking about in terms of Nightline and the Swift boats is absolutely fascinating, and I've been hearing different interpretations of it from people throughout the day.
Of course. So
it's very, very interesting. And whether the Swift boats are going to come out with anything more, I mean, I think they probably will.
Oh, bet on it. This campaign. Have either of you two read the article in Harper's about Karl Rove and his tactics? It's in the current Harper's.
Yes, I have. But then I've also read Wayne Slater's book and seen the film.
Yeah, it's absolutely shocking, Karl Rove's, the way he's handled previous campaigns. Ellen, what's happening on your end?
Well, Senator Kerry is going to be giving a huge economic speech. They've already sent out the talking points, and it really has, I think, some very specifics in terms of health care, in terms of managing the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is very important, fuel efficiency, all the issues that I think are concerned to most Americans. And he will be giving this speech this afternoon. He hasn't yet given it. It will be in Milwaukee, which, as you know, is very much a swing state. Looks like it's turning towards Kerry. I've also heard from people in West Virginia that the Kerry people have somewhat pulled out of their interest there, which means that either they think they've got the state or they think they don't have the state. And my guess is they think they don't have the state.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. All right. And anything else hot happening that either one of you think worthy of reporting?
Well, I think that it's fairly quiet, I would say, wouldn't you, Ellen?
Very quiet. But I think that the gay issue, as it deals with Mary Cheney, has certainly bubbled, and you can expect to hear that a lot on the weekend shows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that amazes me about that is that the person who first brought Mary Cheney's lesbianism into the mainstream political dialogue was Dick Cheney himself at a town meeting. And I don't know why every single story about Kerry mentioning that isn't prefaced by the fact that 3 weeks ago, Dick Cheney himself, in a town hall meeting, pointed out the fact that his daughter was gay and threw it on the table for political discussion.
Right, and I think that, look, I would not have advised Kerry to do what he did in exactly that way. But the fact is she works for the Bush-Cheney campaign. She works as a political operative. It's not like she's having a private life.
Yeah. Yeah, and her father has been talking about her in that context too. I mean, they want to have her there when they want to talk about being compassionate conservatives, but they don't want to have her there when somebody else brings her up and points out the fact that they're being hypocrites and bigots. And
it's
a tragedy. Victoria Jones and Ellen Ratner, thank you so much for being with us from the Talk Radio News Service today.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. Yep, great to hear from you both, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Here we are, or we'll talk to you on Monday. Here we are in California, back at the Organic Wine Company. Veronique Raskin, I'd like you to just speak for a moment about the politics of organic. Why? Of course, you have organic wines, and I know in France the soil actually has to be organic for 25 years before you can call it. Isn't it like that?
Three years.
Okay, 3 years, but it's substantial, and there are serious standards in France about that. For it to be truly organic, and you are as committed to the organic movement as to selling wine. I mean, this isn't just about wine for you guys.
No. This is actually about organic and about saving the earth, and we've been trying to carry that message for 25 years with complete dedication and passion, because we think it's absolutely critical at this point for everyone to support organic, be it because it's good for the earth, it is good for the farmers, it is good for the higher good, it's good for your health. It is just as critical as to help a pregnant woman stay away from chemicals. And that is because, in my view, we are to the earth what the fetus is to the mother. And we are, at the moment, clearly killing our mother. So every little step that we can take, whether it be buying organic cotton, buying organic tomatoes, or drinking wines made with organic grapes and certified that is critical as well, that you buy products that are certified organic.
Yeah.
All those little steps will add up, hopefully, to a critical mass of consciousness and of assistance to our Earth, and every one of us is needed.
Yeah, this is the thing. Some years ago, you've been doing a newsletter, a mm-hmm. web newsletter for some time, and some years ago you'd actually taken a clip out of one of my books, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, about these issues. And again, this
Absolutely.
Was long before we had any sort of business relationship. This was, I just thought this was great that somebody in business would be so concerned about the ecological issues and that they would build a business grounded in the idea that we have to both save our Earth and save ourselves, that it's not just personally healthy, that it's healthy for the planet.
Oh, absolutely. And it's getting even more so as we speak. Every
yeah.
single day, it's yeah. even more critical, which is why we're here today, and we're trying to work with you
yeah.
on this and put that message out and really asking everybody to listen to your message, the ecologic message.
Yeah. Now, while we've been on the air,
drinking,
here,
yes.
yeah, I've been sipping this Chardonnay, which is just absolutely extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that in this package that you're offering right now, this was just something you put together for our listeners, and it's three bottles of wine that have a retail value of $50. And there's basically two relatively inexpensive bottles, the Chardonnay and the Merlot,
mm-hmm.
and those would normally retail at what?
Between $10 and $12 on the store.
Yeah, and from you.
From us, $12 for one bottle, and then you have discounts.
Yeah, okay. So you've got two $12 bottles of wine. And then also there's a high-end wine, the Chateau Busquet. How do you say it?
Busquet.
Busquet, thank you. And tell us about that.
This comes from our family, from our ancestors' land. And that's, in fact, why we started this company 25 years ago,
yeah.
because we wanted to keep a connection with our own roots.
Yeah.
And this was one of the very first wines that was made in France with organic grapes. And it happens to be superior as well,
and
very good grapes.
And the Chateau Busquet normally retails or sells on your website and sells in stores.
$26.
So there's a $26 bottle of wine and then two $12 bottles of wine. About $50 worth of wine for $25.
Correct.
Plus shipping?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And that's the deal that you're offering right now?
Yes, exactly. We do the Tom special.
Tom deal, yeah. So the total that it would cost somebody is how much?
Probably $35 to $37. It's about $10 to $12 depending on your location.
Yeah, because this stuff is heavy to ship, yeah.
Yeah,
and that's really to get people. I'd like to try the Merlot. I'm fond of cheap wines. I mean, I love expensive wines too. But for me, the test of a vineyard or of a variety of wines is if you can also produce an inexpensive wine mm-hmm. that really has good flavor. And so we have the Domaine de Savoie.
Savignac.
Savignac. Okay, thank you. And this is the Merlot. And how would you describe this?
Well, this is a kind of a classic country wine from the south of France. So it's kind of your everyday table wine. I would have that with a pizza. It's nothing overpowering. It's just a basic standard, very well made, clean. I mean, you just can have that every day with your meal. You know, have to understand that in France, the context of drinking wine is very different than here. Most wine is drunk during the meal and to accompany food. So it doesn't have to be a fabulous wine. You know, most people are looking for something that it's a beverage. You know, it's a healthy beverage. And for people, for the French soul, it's really critical. And I just read, I don't know if you've seen this book, Wine and War.
No.
It's fabulous. I'll give that to you. It's very interesting to see what happened between the Germans and the French during the war and how they handled
it.
Oh, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Michelle, I just took a sip of this Merlot, and this is nothing like American table wine, Gallo. I mean, it's
no.
this is as good as any high-end imported wine or American-made wine. This is right up there with some of the $30 and $40.
Really? Well, we tend to be a bit subdued, but absolutely. It's a real stuff. It's real, something that we would not consider high end, but very good stuff.
Yeah. This is an authentic wine. This isn't just a mass produced.
Exactly. We're definitely insisting on getting our wines from small wineries. You know, we produce a few thousand cases at the most.
So this is sort of the wine equivalent of the shade-grown coffee movement, only supporting...
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Because you import wines beyond just the ones that you yourself...
Absolutely. We have about 40 different wines now that you can check on our website, and about 12 different wineries.
Yeah, great. Okay, we're at the headquarters of the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com, or if you'd like to call the Organic Wine Company, their number 1-888-ECO-WINE, 1-888-ECO-WINE, and they are offering specials and deals, and besides that, we're having a fine time here. Stick around, we'll be right back. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, "To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times." Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. As the presidential election looms closer, Americans' prosperity has become a central campaign issue, and a new report by the Working Poor Families Project throws new light on a highly charged debate. More than one quarter of all U.S. workers are paid poverty wages, and 20 million children live in families that don't earn enough to meet basic needs, according to a shocking new report entitled Working Hard, Falling Short. Brandon Roberts is co-author of the publication.
9.2 million working families are low income. These are families that are struggling to make ends meet and to advance to the middle class.
Robert says there's a huge and growing disparity between America's low-income service labor force and businesses' demand for highly skilled workers. He says there needs to be a coordinated effort between states and the federal government on programs that help low-wage workers.
Across the country, we have a very uneven commitment from state to state in how we assist low-income, hard-working families to get ahead and to stay ahead. And, of course, our key recommendation is engender a national discussion and examination of how we can better utilize our resources and our public systems.
Robert suggests a minimum wage hike as a simple measure that could be taken to immediately lift some of the financial burden off the backs of working families.
One-third of these low-income working families have a parent without a high school degree. If you take a typical family of four with two working adults, if both of those workers were employed full-time year-round and earned the minimum wage, together their salary is going to equal $21,424. That's far short of what it takes for a family to be economically self-sufficient.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Why me, George? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the plagues that you've sown?
Oh, why me, George? This has got to be my favorite.
What did I ever do for a whiz kid like you to bring chaos to my home?
And my absolute favorite of Jim Tour's works.
Help me, Jesus, we didn't vote for him, but we can't ignore him, I fear.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. That from BlueCanyonSatire.com and BlueCanyonProductions.com. Jim Tur's absolutely brilliant website. This guy does some of the best satire in the business. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jeff in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line on line one. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. Another glass of wine here, I'll be even greater.
Yeah, if you could send some to Michigan, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, I think we can, actually. So what's
well,
up?
I just wanted to give you some information about Cornerstone College, or Cornerstone University, actually, in Grand Rapids, where those kids were stealing the signs.
Yeah, from the university from which that was being attended by the students who were stealing signs, yeah.
Correct. I believe it's a Baptist college or university because they are connected with the Grand Rapids Baptist Seminary.
Mm.
And I just thought that if people wanted to call and ask and see if the dean of students was doing anything about this, they could call. And I just wanted to give the phone number if you wanted it.
You know, I'd rather not because I don't, unless you have any evidence of an institutional problem here, you know, that the institution itself has
been encouraging
this. No, I
drove by and there is no Bush sign out front.
Yeah. Then I'd rather not because I think that, you know, it's like picking on somebody. It's like picking on an employer because somebody works there and they did something else in their private life. I think we're stretching.
Right.
I do think, you know, I think it's very appropriate that we've had a couple of calls from Grand Rapids and other cities where people have talked about, Bush Gore or even Kerry Edwards for that matter. Those calls probably go into the right wing shows. But Bush Gore signs on the lawns of the parishes of churches, you know, that are tax exempt.
I sent you some pictures.
Okay. Yeah. I got them, and I encourage you to post them to our message board. In fact, I don't think that. I don't fault the institution here, but I think that it would be good for there to be an investigation done into this. I'd like to find out, you know, who these kids are and if they had any affiliation, frankly, with the Republican Party. Because, particularly having read this piece in Harper's about Karl Rove's campaign tactics, it is absolutely scary. I mean, you've got to pick up the current issue of Harper's and read this article on Karl Rove. We're talking about somebody who seems, in my mind, committed to destroying the normal economic and democratic process in the United States. A very, very destructive thing. Jeff, thanks for the call from Grand Rapids. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When you look at a forest, do you see pretty flowers and cute little critters hopping around? Well, when we billionaires look at a forest, we see redwood decks, teak furniture, and reams of bleached white paper. We look at all the untapped natural resources available, and we see opportunity where others can't see the forest for the trees. Aren't you bored of tree huggers whining about the precious old-growth forests? Don't they understand the law of supply and demand? The more trees we clear cut, the more scarce we make them, and the more valuable they become as a commodity. So the next time you hear the buzz of chainsaws, know the billionaires are giving Mother Nature more bang for her buck. I'm Zena Fope for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billion.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We got much more manpower, much more equipment there. It's just, he just doesn't understand how the borders work, evidently, to say that. That is an outrageous claim. And we'll continue to protect our borders. We'll continue to increase manpower and equipment.
That was President George W. Bush during Wednesday night's debate against Senator John Kerry. The presidential candidates were asked to comment on immigration policies and protection of the U.S. borders. While Bush says the borders are better protected, a survey of Border Patrol officers released on August 23, 2004, isn't quite as optimistic. 64% of border workers say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do their job. Charles Scholotter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, says the department puts more effort into making sure employees look right, but not in their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
In addition, the president again mentioned his guest worker status card for immigrant workers. He failed to explain why during the last session of Senate when a bill sponsored by Republican Senator Larry E. Craig of Idaho that would have helped 500,000 farm workers gain legal temporary residency, White House officials asked Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist to not offer the bill for a vote. As a result, the bill died on the floor. Craig has vowed to reintroduce the legislation in this session.
By the end of 2006, General Motors will slash up to 12,000 jobs from its European operations, mostly in Germany. That's 20% of its European workforce. Workers in an Opel plant walked off their jobs when they learned of GM's plans. A United statement put out by GM's unions throughout Europe warned that this could have consequences like the 1998 Flint, Michigan UAW strike against GM in North America. GM lost $2.1 billion in that one when strikers virtually shut down the entire GM North American operation, along with many GM suppliers. GM says the cost of labor in Germany is the main reason it's cutting the 12,000 jobs. No plants will be closed by these cuts, according to GM, but the company expects to save as much as $620 million a year. GM has been outsourcing some white-collar jobs to Canada and to India from its plants in the U.S., and it says the cost of labor in Germany isn't sustainable. Weak demand for new cars in Germany also played a role in the decision to slash the jobs. GM has to start negotiations now with unions in Germany on the details of the job cuts. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Gains made in ensuring children and the poor are threatened by state budgets that are cutting Medicaid. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Medicaid budget shortfalls of $40 billion exist in the states. Nearly half the states have acted to restrict enrollment or make it harder to stay in the state children's health insurance program known as SHIP. Children account for nearly half of all those getting Medicaid. Another 4 million are covered under SHIP.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
In monarchies, the peasants are not even supposed to speak to the royals unless spoken to. In democracies, however, folks are supposed to be free to speak their minds to those in power. That's what Sue Niederer of Hopewell, New Jersey, tried to do. Earlier this year, her 24-year-old son Seth was killed in Iraq while trying to defuse a roadside bomb. Angry is not a strong enough word to describe her emotions. Mad as hell and not going to take it is a phrase that comes closer to Sue's feelings. To express those feelings, she attended a Laura Bush political rally near her home. She wore a politically incorrect T-shirt emblazoned with a picture of Seth and the words, "President Bush killed my son." As Laura pattered on about the heroic nature of her husband's war on terrorism, Miss Nieder hollered out an uninvited but totally legitimate question. If the war is so essential to our national security, why aren't the Bush daughters enlisting in it? Raw ugliness erupted. Bush partisans immediately surrounded this distraught lady, shouting 4 more years over and over while waving their Bush-Cheney signs at her. Hello, she lost her son in Bush's war of lies, and this is the respect she gets from the Bushites? Worse, the police handcuffed her, hauled her to jail, and booked her for trespassing. Of course, the charge was ludicrous and later had to be dropped, but the Bushites are still after her. Now, Bush's Secret Service is investigating Sue, claiming she threatened the president's life. What she did, in an understandable fit of anger, was to say on a website that she'd like to rip the president's head off and shoot him in the groin area. Of course, she didn't mean the comments literally, yet the vindictive Bushites are using them as an excuse to hound and try to destroy her. This is Jim Hightower saying, to tell the monarchy of King George W. to leave Sue Niederer alone, call the White House comment line, 202-456-1111.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Glad to have you back. Streaming down from outer space on Sirius, the Sirius satellite radio system. Pleased to welcome Howard Stern to the fold a year and some months hence. And broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations all across the United States. Melanie Sloan is the Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Government. She's led a fight against, of all people, the bug killer intoxicated Tom DeLay. Melanie, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks for having me.
I'm pleased to see you here, or have you here. First of all, he's trying to cite you for contempt of Congress. I want to get into that, but before we get to that, I have a copy of your filing against DeLay here. And it looks to me like it's primarily you're charging him with FOIA violations, the Freedom of Information Act violations. Give us a broad overview before I try to figure out the legalese here.
Sure. The FOIA matter is actually just a little bit different, but Tom DeLay had an ethics complaint filed against him by Chris Bell, a representative from Texas, a Democrat, who is going to be leaving Congress at the end of his term. And I helped draft that complaint for Representative Bell. And the complaint mainly went through three areas. One, that Mr. DeLay had seemed to solicit money from the company Westar Energy in return for legislative assistance. One of his PACs got $25,000 from Westar, and in fact, Westar has since been indicted for that contribution down in Texas. And another count was about all of the redistricting. In the redistricting battle in Texas, there has been a lot of corporate money spent on state races, and that's illegal in Texas. Corporate money can't be spent on state races, and Tom DeLay's PAC is the one who took in that money and spent the money. And
now,
then the third allegation is that Tom DeLay misused the Federal Aviation Administration in order to track down a bunch of legislators who had fled Texas in a big redistricting battle they were having down there. And he had called the FAA to track down their plane.
Now, Melanie Sloan, Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, two or three times in the last week or so, I've been seeing this Tom DeLay soundbite on network news, on cable news, over and over and over again, essentially claiming that he's been vindicated, that they only slapped his hand, that there were no serious charges against him, that everything's fine, that what are these people making a big deal about? How can he get away with saying that when what it sounds like to me what you're describing are actually crimes?
Well, that's certainly my perspective as a former prosecutor, that they are crimes. The House Ethics Committee is not known for its courage. In fact, they have had a truce for the past 7 years whereby nobody, either Democrat or Republican, files ethics complaints against anybody else. Chris Bell finally violated the terms of the truce and brought the ethics complaint, and I don't think anybody over in the leadership of either side was very happy about it. And the Ethics Committee has tried to avoid doing anything for as long as possible, but in the end, although DeLay can say all he wants that he walked away, they just dismissed it, that is not what happened. He was admonished on two of the counts in that complaint, and the committee didn't dismiss the third. It held on to it to defer it until the future, because that's the allegation
after the elections.
The money spent on the Texas races is currently the subject of a grand jury investigation in Texas, which, by the way, may very well lead to an indictment of Tom DeLay. And the committee, the ethics committee, decided to wait until after that issue had been resolved before they took action. And this is all on top of the week earlier, Mr. DeLay being admonished for having tried to bribe Representative Nick Smith back in November to change his vote and vote for the Medicare bill. Mr. DeLay had offered to support Mr. Smith's son, who was running for Congress, to replace him. He would, in fact, change his vote.
Yeah. Now,
DeLay's been admonished three times now in a week period.
Melanie Sloan, what does admonished mean?
Well, that's a very good question. Technically speaking, the Ethics Committee rules don't allow for anybody to be admonished. You can be reprimanded and you can be censored, but there was no admonishment. And it seems that the committee has made up this sort of new standard whereby they can send somebody a letter admonishing them, basically telling them that their conduct is unacceptable. Now, the committee also said to Mr. DeLay, though, not only is your conduct not acceptable, you need to change it because we're noticing a pattern here. And if you continue this pattern, you need to realize that we can look into you for the pattern as well as for any specific act. But in spite of those words warning Mr. DeLay to be careful, he immediately asked that Chris Bell and I both be held in contempt of Congress. And then members of the House leadership have actually threatened Joel Heffley, the chairman of the Ethics Committee, for having done even the minimum of admonishing DeLay.
That's mind-boggling. Melanie Sloan, if you are successfully prosecuted for contempt of Congress, what sort of consequence would you be facing?
Well, I could probably lose my bar license. I'm a lawyer. It's even possible I could go to jail. I will say that nobody's been prosecuted for contempt of Congress the way they're talking since 1949. And most of the precedents they cite are from the late 1800s, early 1900s. So they're really stretching it. I'm not spending a lot of my time worrying that I could actually be held in contempt. But I do think it's astonishing that rather than acknowledging his own bad conduct, Mr. DeLay is now focusing on trying to have me held in contempt just for trying to bring his conduct to light.
But isn't that increasingly, I mean, again, this Harper's Magazine article this month about Karl Rove and his tactics, it's, you know, plan your defense very carefully and then go on to an absolutely relentless, crush your opponents, you know, wipe out their memory from, you know, salt the earth, you know, sort of thing. Strategy, I mean, this is just, it has become the Republican strategy basically since the mid-90s, since the rise of Newt Gingrich and his minions.
I totally agree with you, but it is simply not acceptable. I will not be intimidated by these kind of tactics. I will not stop doing anything I'm doing because they threaten me. In my view, if they're threatening me, I must be getting close.
Well said, Melanie Sloan. Do you have a website, or is there a place where people can find more information about what you're doing?
Sure. It's www.citizensforethics.org, and Citizens for Ethics is all one word.
And F-O-R is the four ethics is spelled out as F-O-R-E-T-H. Right. Citizensforethics.org. And what can people do to support the work that you're doing?
Well, you know, the most important thing that people can do is tell their own politicians that unethical conduct is not acceptable either in their politicians or in Tom DeLay. You have to realize that people need to know that Tom DeLay becomes the majority leader because other members of Congress vote for him to be majority leader. And if other members won't vote for him, he can't be the majority leader. And people in districts all over the country should tell their members of Congress that they think Tom DeLay's conduct is unacceptable and they don't want to see him as majority leader anymore, and they will not support their congressman if he's going to support Tom DeLay.
Yeah, yeah. Melanie Sloan, when did we start sanctioning bribery in the United States? I mean, this used to be a crime. Teddy Roosevelt campaigned vigorously in the, I believe it was the 1904 election, and on banning corporate participation in politics. In fact, he said we can have no active democracy as long as corporations play a role in the political process. No healthy democracy, excuse me. And in 1907, he got passed a federal law which barred corporations from giving money to politicians or to political parties. Before that, there was a broad consensus that if, you know, an individual gave money, that was, you know, within certain bounds reasonable. If a, you know, if a J.P. Morgan type individual gave millions, that really was over, that was beyond the pale. And we used to have laws about bribery, and we used to call this stuff bribery. When did we stop?
You know, that's a good question. Politicians are constantly debating whether when wealthy donors give them money, if they're then, you know, doing special favors for those donors. I will say that in my mind, it has gotten remarkably worse in the last 4 years. The only way I really see out of it is something that I had not previously supported, which was publicly financed campaigns, because the money always goes to campaigns, and politicians are always worrying about the cost of their next campaign. So people who are willing to give them money for that next campaign always have their ear. And I think
What nations have publicly financed campaigns? Are there role models out there that we can look to?
You know, it's something I don't know enough about. I believe that there are other countries that do. We are, I think, the only country that runs our elections the way we do, where corporations have so much input into the way into the decisions that are made. I don't think you'd see nearly the same kind of thing in Europe, for example.
Yeah. Well, I know that there are caps.
Really, with Tom DeLay, he's brought bribery to a whole new art form. His bribery and extortion. I mean, he actually keeps a book in his office noting how much money everybody has given him. And when lobbyists want something, they come in and he sits them down and then he opens his book and says, well, let's see. This is how much money you gave us and this is how much money you gave the Democrats. What is it you wanted again?
And how could anybody think this is not one of the most corrupt politicians on the planet? I mean,
you know,
I have absolutely
no idea. And
why not go after
it's
him?
It's not just the Ethics Committee that should be doing something. Frankly, the Justice Department should be investigating.
I was just going to say, why not go after him under the RICO laws? This certainly sounds to me like it qualifies like as organized crime.
I think so, too. And, in fact, I've been trying to sue Tom DeLay for RICO. The problem – now, the Justice Department could – easily sue him for RICO, but I don't think the Justice Department under John Ashcroft is going to be charging Tom DeLay with RICO violations anytime soon. Yep. There is a way for private citizens to sue under the RICO statute, but it would require somebody being willing to be a plaintiff who has been damaged by Tom DeLay. And Tom DeLay is known to be perhaps the most vindictive politician the United States has ever known, and nobody is willing to take on Tom DeLay. I mean, even to find a congressman to file the ethics complaint, it took a retiring member, someone who's not going to be there anymore, who won't be afraid of DeLay. And I can't find anyone who has been harmed by Tom DeLay in a financial way, which you have to be able to prove in a RICO case, who's been willing to take on delay and sue him.
So the guy. This is the way the Nazis worked. I mean, in absolute intimidation. This is in America.
Absolutely the way
in America this is going on.
Yes, and you know, until we start insisting on more from our government, this is what we're going to get. I mean, Tom DeLay could be voted out of office. People could say we don't want this, and unfortunately, that just doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah, well, in fact, the people in his district, we've got about 20 seconds left here, Melanie. The citizens of his district seem rather happy with him. How could that be?
One word, money. He brings back, you know, everything that the district needs. His colleagues support him because he is such a prodigious fundraiser and he gives away so much money. And his district is happy because he brings home the bacon.
It's the old Tip O'Neill, all politics is local, ultimately, and he's learned how to game the system on both directions. Melanie Sloan, the Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Government, the website www.citizensforethics.org. Check it out. Remarkable. Melanie, thanks for being with us today.
Good to be here.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive. survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting from the world headquarters in the San Francisco area of the Organic Wine Company. And one of the things that I find most fascinating about this whole issue is historically, there is this notion. Adam Smith laid this out. Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, in talking about international trade. The Wealth of Nations is commonly quoted by economists all over the place. Oddly, conservative ones seem to quote him more than liberals. I think he was the original liberal economist. Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations points out that international trade is good in certain circumstances. And here's his example. He talked about how if one country made good wine, another country made good cheese, and a third country made good wool. And in each case, those countries were able to do that both because of their culture and their long experience of doing that, and because they had unique local conditions that lent to producing those things, then all three countries could improve the quality of their life if they traded with each other. So everybody could have good wool, nice sweaters, good wine, good cheese. Now, the modern-day free market folks have just twisted this all out of recognition and said, well, let's just, let everybody trade with everybody. But Smith was very clear that, for example, if you're the nation that makes the best wine, you don't want to be importing wine. You want to be exporting it, but you do want to be importing those sweaters. And Michelle is here with us of the Organic Wine Company, and Michelle. And, Michel, you shared with me during the break this book, Wine and War. And this, I got a real aha looking at this thing. The subtitle is The French, the Nazis, and the Battle for France's Greatest Treasure. It's by Don and Petit Kladstrup. And it was about what the Nazis did when they invaded France. And why? Tell us about that.
Well, the first move was to seize the art objects and everything they could put their hands on, and wine was one of the top of the list because they knew that the French soul was into the wine they produced for generations.
It was the soul of France.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in the battle, just behind ammunition, it was critical for the French armies to have wine.
And it wasn't just to drink and get drunk. It was to make it unavailable to the French. It was part of the process of stripping out the national identity.
Absolutely. And interesting that I learned that from Hitler's Eagle's Nest, it was recovered half a million bottles.
Of French wine
of the top of the best wines that he didn't touch, but because he didn't drink wine himself.
Yeah.
But
no, he was shooting narcotics instead. It's, boy, oh boy. But he would have done much better if he drank wine. I think he would have
been nicer character.
Perhaps. I think he was pretty over the top to begin with. Now, so this is a fascinating thing, and this makes the case that I've been making for all these years that countries need to have rational trade policies, and it's like you drive through any city in America and it looks like any other city. The French wines are unique.
Absolutely. Each one reflects the character of the region, of the terroir, of the climate, and the tradition of the people there.
Right. And you're dealing just with small vineyards.
Absolutely. Only family vineyards that produce a few hundred cases.
Yeah. And the result of this is that people have, you know, extraordinary taste opportunities that they wouldn't get if they just went into the supermarket and bought one.
Exactly. And that's what we want to provide people, to the opportunity to taste something extraordinary, very, very unique, with high personality, that you will not find in the supermarket.
The soul of France. And I know you guys took a big hit when O'Reilly and all these cons, about a 30% hit in your business when these guys went after Don't Buy French.
Absolutely. It was very strong. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to see you coming back and offering good products. We're going to come back here with Bush Can't Seem to Tell the Truth on the Stump. Yep, on the stump. Forget about the debates. They're in the past. He's out there lying to people on a day-to-day basis. On it goes. Stay tuned, friends. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman with you.
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We got much more manpower, much more equipment there. It's just, he just doesn't understand how the borders work, evidently, to say that. That is an outrageous claim. And we'll continue to protect our borders. We'll continue to increase manpower and equipment.
That was President George W. Bush during Wednesday night's debate against Senator John Kerry. The presidential candidates were asked to comment on immigration policies and protection of the U.S. borders. While Bush says the borders are better protected, a survey of Border Patrol officers released on August 23, 2004, isn't quite as optimistic. 64% of border workers say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do their job. Charles Scholotter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, says the department puts more effort into making sure employees look right, but not in their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
In addition, the president again mentioned his guest worker status card for immigrant workers. He failed to explain why during the last session of Senate when a bill sponsored by Republican Senator Larry E. Craig of Idaho that would have helped half a million farm workers gain legal temporary residency, White House officials asked Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist to not offer the bill for a vote. As a result, the bill died on the floor. Craig has vowed to reintroduce the legislation this session.
By the end of 2006, General Motors will slash up to 12,000 jobs from its European operations, mostly in Germany. That's 20% of its European workforce. Workers in an Opel plant walked off their jobs when they learned of GM's plans. A United statement put out by GM's unions throughout Europe warned that this could have consequences like the 1998 Flint, Michigan UAW strike against GM in North America. GM lost $2.1 billion in that one when strikers virtually shut down the entire GM North American operation, along with many GM suppliers. GM says the cost of labor in Germany is the main reason it's cutting the 12,000 jobs. No plants will be closed by these cuts, according to GM, but the company expects to save as much as $620 million a year. GM has been outsourcing some white-collar jobs to Canada and to India from its plants in the U.S., and it says the cost of labor in Germany isn't sustainable. Weak demand for new cars in Germany also played a role in the decision to slash the jobs. GM has to start negotiations now with unions in Germany on the details of the job cuts. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Gains made in ensuring children and the poor are threatened by state budgets that are cutting Medicaid. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Medicaid budget shortfalls of $40 billion exist in the states. Nearly half the states have acted to restrict enrollment or make it harder to stay in the state children's health insurance program known as SHIP. Children account for nearly half of all those getting Medicaid. Another 4 million are covered under SHIP.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You see everything. You see every fight. You see all my
life. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from California. Tomorrow I'm speaking at the Bioneers Conference on... We're going to be talking about corporate personhood. We're going to be talking about renewable energy. It's going to be a fascinating day. And, of course, I'll be back in the People's Republic of Vermont on Monday doing the program live from there. Thanks especially to Rama Schneider for coming in and engineering our program, running the board, taking care of all the technical details, and to Ira Gravatt as well for helping out, answering the phones, and taking care of his end of the technical stuff, making all of this possible, and to Veronique and Michelle of the Organic Wine Company for giving us a place to hang out here today and do the program from. It's definitely a plus. It's very, very, very pleasant and pleased to be here. Bush can't seem to tell the truth on the stump. Kerry spokesman Phil Singer, he says, it's a lot easier to give a speech to your base than it is to defend a record in a debate. George Bush is offering the same old policies and attacks and making it clear that if he gets reelected, he'll spend the next 4 years doing what he did to the country for the last 4 years. The country's had enough red meat and enough red herrings from George Bush. Time for a fresh start. Here's what Bush said, for example. This in Las Vegas, Nevada, yesterday. George Bush said, And once again, last night, with a straight face, the senator, shall we say, refined his answer on the proposed global test that he would administer before acting to defend America. After trying to say it wasn't really a test at all, last night he once again defended his approach, saying, I think it makes sense. The senator now says we have to pass some international truth standard. Those are his words. Now, let me get this straight. George Bush is making fun of a politician for saying that we shouldn't, for saying that we should tell the truth to the world. Here it is. He says, George Bush says, the senator now says we have to pass some international truth standard. And then to ridicule this, he says, those were his words. I mean, this is scary, scary times. I'd like to get the opinion. Veronique Raskin of the Organic Wine Company. Let's not talk about wine for a minute here. One of the things that fascinates me about you is you've lived in this country for about a quarter century, right?
Yep.
25
mm-hmm.
years.
Yes.
And but you're French.
Yes.
And still sound like it.
Oh yes.
And I'm wondering what I know. You can't speak for all French citizens in France, certainly,
no.
And you can't speak for all French living in the United States.
No.
But you're an astute political observer. You're a very insightful person, and I'm wondering how have things changed in the United States over the last few decades that you've lived here? What have you seen, and what's your sense of what's going on right now?
What I've seen is something that right now has me frankly heartbroken and very scared. I've seen particularly in the past few years, and I'm getting more and more concerned for the future of America. I'm concerned. I'm horrified about the loss of all these lives, young American lives abroad. I am horrified by the amount of chemicalization that we are all submitted to. I am deeply saddened and very, very concerned, very, yeah, very scared.
What the Bush administration, without getting political, and I know that, you know, you're not a voter, so it's
no, I'm not a voter.
But do you see something qualitatively different from George Bush than you did from, say, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, other Republican administrations?
I really can't make a comment about that because I was not here during the years of Nixon.
Uh-huh.
So count me out in terms of actual political opinion. This is a person's opinion.
Yeah.
This is what I've observed about this country. I really love and cared very much about. I care about you guys' reputation outside. I know it's suffered greatly over the past few years, and I regret that the American leadership does not realize how much they've damaged their goodwill abroad, and that really pains me.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that I was profiled a year and a half ago for the first time in my life, when
really?
All of a sudden being a French person was a bad thing, simply because I was, because the Chirac was not in favor of the war, and that made me a bad person.
And if it hadn't been for Lafayette and it hadn't been for the French, we would not have a United States.
Yeah, so it was another piece of heartbreak here.
Yeah.
So it's been very painful.
That's very sad.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that comment, Veronique. It's Carrie. Here's Carrie in the third presidential debate, what he actually said. He said, "I have never suggested a test where we turn our security over to any nation. In fact, I've said the opposite. I will never turn the security of the United States over to any nation." So, very straightforward. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to comment on this. Marion in Nevada is on the line, is on line 3. Hey, Marion, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for talking to me. I've been listening to all the rhetoric, and I am a sort of a closet economist, and I thought I would just put everything in numbers. A tax cut versus a 50-cent an hour wage increase for people in the United States who are working.
Okay.
And I actually sent you an email with my little spreadsheet, and I did not include some things that would be extensive costs to the country. For instance, people who make a lot of money who got a tax dole also, they don't really spend that money in the economy. It goes into the stock market or bonds or something, which is really a money valuation thing.
And in fact, many cases, it's going into overseas investments.
Yeah, so it really doesn't help us in any case. So the one-year effect of a $300 tax cut, which I'm assuming is the amount every person who's normal got, is the cost to the taxpayers $264 billion. And the direct cost of taxes is $45 billion, but the opportunity cost, which if you had a 50-cent increase, is $252 billion.
Now, explain what that means, the opportunity cost. What do you
mean? If everybody got a little bit more money, like 50 cents an hour, I mean, on the average.
In their paycheck rather than as a tax refund.
Exactly.
Right.
If everybody got that little bit more money, they would have more cash in their pocket. They would pay taxes on that. So the government would have the taxes on that little bit more money.
Ah, okay. So here is the big difference. Rather than... Because the conservative thing is, we're gonna put more money in your pocket. You're gonna get a larger paycheck because the government's taking a smaller bite out of it.
Yeah.
But that, of course, is throwing the government into debt, so that we're gonna have to pay that money back anyway. So what you're saying is give people that extra 50 cents in their paycheck per hour or whatever it is.
Right.
But do it rather than by cutting taxes, by increasing the minimum wage. And the benefit of that is.
Right. Well, the benefit of it is that the people who get that money spend that money on things that the economy uses. And when I spend a dollar at the grocery store turns around and buys fruit and produce or whatever, and they pay their people and on and on and on. So I increase my demand. And that person, the clerk, she gets more money because they might have to hire another clerk, or the farmer gets more money because there's that much more money in the system. And so those people, they spend the more money that they get, too. And I forget how old the theory is. I don't think it's Adam Smith time, but it's later. It's an 8 times multiple in the economy when you spend a dollar. And that doesn't include anything like my credit rating might go up, so I might get more credit, so I might spend more money. I mean, this is very, very, very conservative.
Yeah, the general rule of thumb that I've seen is that every $50,000 a year job, which is the high end of middle class statistics, I mean, the median income in the United States is $36,000, but every $50,000 a year job produces 5 additional jobs in the neighborhood.
Right.
In the community.
And it doesn't even go there. I mean, that would put this in the trillions. The four-year effect of what I've calculated here is $916 billion cost to the taxpayer by not having more taxes, by having to pay interest on a growing deficit. I mean, we could have funded the war if that was the right thing to do, and I don't think it was. We could have funded so many things just by being economically sound.
Yeah, just the cost as increasingly Americans who have gone into debt at the encouragement of
of this administration in large part.
Oh, sure. I mean, people are ex savings.
They're discovering that there's a cost to debt. You have to pay. You know, somebody's making a profit off the fact that you're in debt,
and
cost is substantial. It's very substantial.
Yeah.
Marianne, thanks for the call. I appreciate the information. It's good solid stuff. Thank you so much. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our telephone number if you would like to call and you'd like to be on the program. Bush, of course, spelled out, well, without going back to the global test, let me get on the health plan. Again, Bush on the stump yesterday. This is Bush. Once again last night, with a straight face, the senator tried to say his health care plan is not a government plan. Yet 22 million people are being enrolled in a government plan under his plan, the largest expansion of government health care ever. 80% of the newly insured on his plan would be placed on a government program like Medicaid. Well, his charge has been called fiction by a number of newspapers. The Washington Post, in an editorial, said, for example, this is simply not true, distorts Kerry's health plan, which actually offers more choices and relies on a private health care system, which, by the way, I disagree with. But let's just we'll leave that rant for another time. According to the Washington Post editorial, Bush's attack on Kerry is fiction. Bush lied again about Kerry's record on tax cut. Kerry's gone on the legislative record over 640 times for lower taxes. And Bush tried to cover up his failure on his record of failure on trade, but under Bush we have the second highest monthly trade deficit ever. The record trade deficit so far this year is up 19% from last year. Keep in mind, you wonder why so many companies in your community are owned by foreign corporations. It's because we're sending all this money overseas, and they've got to do something with that money, so they come over here and they buy land and corporations and businesses, and you end up with foreign-owned companies. You end up with Chrysler being owned by Daimler, by Mercedes-Benz. You end up with Random House being owned by Bertelsmann, and on it goes. Veronique and Michelle, are you a foreign-owned business or are you an American business?
No, we're American businesses.
Yeah.
Business.
You're locally incorporated here in the United States.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
So, interesting. So, and a much smaller business, too.
A little smaller than Chrysler. Just a couple of...
And you intend to keep it that way.
Yes, we like it that way. Thank you, Tom.
Before we wrap up here, I had one quick question. One of the things that I noticed when I started drinking organic wines was that I didn't get headaches that I used to get when I would drink regular wine that I bought in the store. And I attributed that to the fact that there are no pesticides or herbicides in your wines. Am I hallucinating as imagining something?
No, you're not hallucinating. That's one of the reasons why I started importing these wines anyway, because I get headaches from conventional wines. And a lot of our clients actually come from that board. They've stopped drinking conventional wines because they feel lousy and things like that. And they find that they really do extremely well with these wines. Okay. I'm not going to make any claims as to why that is. I'm just offering this as an observation.
Yeah, great. Interesting. It is fascinating. Back to politics here. Bush AWOL, as 250 of the world's leaders reaffirm women's rights. Did you catch this news story? 250 global leaders, including former President Bill Clinton, staggering around with stitches in his chest, and Prime Minister Tony Blair, reaffirmed their commitment to a 10-year-old UN plan to ensure the rights of women around the world. In an unprecedented statement, the former and current leaders, including 85 heads of state and government, also called for the fulfillment of the Millennium Development Goals adopted by the UN in 2000. Basically, the bottom line here is that they were saying women should have rights equal with men in the world. And George Bush didn't show up. And in fact, the administration's objection to this. Now, get this. In a letter to the organizers, United States Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Kelly Ryan said Washington was committed to the goals and objectives of the ICDPD, but that it was, quote, unable to endorse the statement. Why? Well, she said, and I quote, the statement includes the concept of sexual rights. Sexual rights. In other words, birth control. This administration is not willing to endorse anything that says that women should be able to decide when they're going to or not going to have children, even contraception. Talking about pandering to the Reich, this is just absolutely over the top. This is harmful to the United States. And this goes beyond just. And again, the U.S. government was recently asked, why is it that ever since 1991 there's been this soaring rate of leukemia among children in Iraq? Well, we're not sure. Have anything to do with depleted uranium? Well, no, of course it couldn't. This is one of the areas where I'm frankly very concerned about our troops. They're being exposed to depleted uranium. I mean, this is in a very nationalistic and xenophobic sense, okay? I'm concerned about our troops. Now, in the broader sense, which I also, you know, it's possible to have both for some people, I'm concerned about the Iraqis, the fact that we have turned Iraq into a nuclear waste dump. We're taking the material from spent nuclear weapons and nuclear reactors. And rather than storing it or hiding it or whatever, we are dumping it on the Iraqis in the form of depleted uranium. And this is just incredible. Did you want to comment on that? Did you want to say something, Bernie?
Yes. When I said earlier that I had a heartbreak, I can't even speak. I mean, I could cry just hearing you say things like this.
Yeah.
For everybody.
About what's happening in the United
States.
About
what's happening around the world. I mean, this is what other response can you have?
Yeah. Well, what we can do is we can do what we can to make a healthier world.
Take action and do every day something, a little something.
There you go. Well said. Thank you, Veronique. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You're in the real free speech zone. Yes, the real free speech zone. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Billionaires for both.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
The recent handover of power back to the Iraqis has got investors worried. They ask, what about our war profiteering? Will we still be able to privatize everything in sight? Darlings, everything is under control because everything is still under our control. Alawi has been a wonderful CIA asset for years. Ambassador John Negroponte cut his teeth working with death squads out of Honduras in the 80s, and 140,000 American troops are protecting our oil as as we pump it out from under their soil. We won't let this business bonanza be ruined by the evils of accountability or democracy. So relax. We know what we're doing. I'm Zena Fogue for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. George Bush predicted his tax cuts would create an average of 300,000 new jobs per month, but the latest numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics are out, and only 96,000 payroll jobs were created in September. And, according to the Economic Policy Institute, that's well below the pace of job creation earlier this year. Lee Price, research director with the EPI, says at least 150,000 new jobs would need to be created per month just to keep up with population growth.
We've got the numbers to expect from the Bush tax cuts. That was 306,000 jobs a month from mid-2003 to the end of 2004. So the job growth we've been getting falls far short of those benchmarks.
Manufacturing jobs fell by 18,000, and EPI economist Jared Bernstein says the report reveals a slower-growing labor force with an employment decline of over 200,000 in this month's household survey.
Private sector jobs in the service sector, private sector jobs were up 72,000, but 33,000 of those were in temporary help, and that job pays well below average and signals a continuing sign of employers' cautious hiring practices.
Up from last month, long-term unemployment of 6 months or more reached 22% in September.
This signals that many potential job seekers are avoiding job searchers in what's a pretty weak labor environment. But most importantly, since these people who are not in the labor market are not counted among the unemployed, it tells us that that 5.4% unemployment rate paints too rosy a picture of just how tight the labor market is.
Since October 2002, more than one-fifth of unemployed workers have been without a job for at least half a year, the largest and longest stretch since 1948. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Here they come again. Catch us if you can.
Yeah, they're trying to catch Tom DeLay. You heard from Melanie in the beginning of this hour, but it's problematic. This is a real challenge. Some of these folks in this Republicans and Democrats. I mean, let's just tell the truth here. The Republican Party is exceptional in their level of corruption and their abuse of power right now. They happen to be the ones in power. We need an active and interested and participating citizenry, and we need to change the rules of the game. I mean, the reality is, okay, Tom DeLay is being indicted for some of his excesses. They're obvious, they're egregious, they're criminal, and should be indicted. But there are a lot of people who are doing things that sure look like bribery, smell like bribery, behave like bribery, for which nobody is being indicted. And we need to be changing the rules of the game. And changing the rules of the game in politics for example, get corporate money out of politics is not something that's going to happen if we just sit back and leave it to the politicians. In fact, if we just sit back and leave it to the politicians like we've been pretty much doing for the last 20 years, as voter turnout has been steadily going down and down and down, we're going to see more of the same, and it's going to get worse. Instead, we must get involved. And the great news that's coming out of this election cycle right now is the unprecedented level of voter participation, the just absolutely incredible level to which people are participating in the electoral process. They're really getting out there and they're really getting active, particularly our young people. I'd say for the first time since the 1970s, young people are getting involved in politics. And I just see it as such a marvelous thing. And meanwhile, at the same time, we find George Bush is now not only the first president to go without creating jobs since the Great Depression, since Herbert Hoover. He's now run up more debt in a shorter period of time than all the presidents of the United States of America combined in the 200 years from Washington through Reagan. Now, once you throw Reagan in there, who was the other debtmeister, Reagan was the other president of the United States who thought that spending money on a credit card, the reason why Dick Cheney says, we now know that deficits don't matter, right? The direct quote from Dick Cheney, he was referring to Reagan. Reagan said, let's spend all this money and make it look like we're having good times and the fool of politicians. You give me a credit card with $1 million credit line that somebody else is going to pay. I can show you what it looks like to live like I'm prosperous. It doesn't mean I am. So now Bush is having to raise the debt ceiling as well, because he's got us in debt more than any other president. In fact, more than all presidents from George Washington to Ronald Reagan combined. It's a tragedy. We can fix it November 2nd. Thanks to Rama for engineering our show, and to Ira. Thanks to Michelle and Veronique for hosting us here in the San Francisco area at the Organic Wine Company. Thanks to our other sponsors, Small Dog Electronics. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like